Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yeah, it's Friday, February 12th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. It is a balmy 19 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. We stuck around 13 degrees for the entire day and night last night. I saw tonight we're going to get down to a low of 1 and then a high of 5 on Saturday. So should be fun. Where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Zika. There are a couple stories I wanted to dig into, have not gotten there yet. So we will get into those maybe Monday. Zika, Obama's billions, technocracy, and Google AI takeover. Now, something very interesting with that title. Apparently, Google does not like me mentioning them in a YouTube video because Google, aka or part of YouTube, YouTube is part of Google, decided that their ad money that I make like 3 cents on my show, they weren't going to let me advertise because I bashed them. Showed how they were infiltrating and their artificial intelligence was tracking lots of things. It's just kind of funny. Like, I didn't copyright anything or violate any copyrights in that show. And they blocked me from monetizing it. So whatever. So it means we're on the right track. All right, so where are we going to continue today? We ended the show looking at Microsoft's underwater data center in the ocean floor that they're working on for beneficial cooling. One of the things about Obama's billions I wanted to mention, we had the $1.8 billion that he's seeking for the CDC and their command and control center of 300 individuals to be there and ready to go at a moment's notice. Anytime we get a call about a Zika emergency, he's sending money to down to South America and to some of the pharmaceutical companies to help battle this, you know, global pandemic. Oh my God. You know, there's the one thing too we brought up yesterday that it's come out now. There are two South American scientists who are saying that it may have the microcephaly might have something to do with the larvicides that are being used down there. And it was some sort of BT bacteria. And I think I mentioned, and if I didn't, I want to give you a kudos. And I don't remember his name, but one of the UCY Facebook subscribers had done some pretty amazing research on the BT bacterium that they cut into the BT corn and showed some correlation between that bacterium and this microencephaly. So like I said, there's probably like 7, 8 links of lots of detailed information that I'm going to try and get through this weekend and get my head around it and try and grasp what's going on here. So we'll see. But then the other part of the Obama billions was the $19 billion that's being dumped into cybersecurity. And, you know, remember the hacking's everywhere. And all of a sudden, we have come to understand that our world is insecure. And, you know, don't think that that wasn't a plan. You know, the world as we knew it, even though we've been doing e-commerce since the 90s, they kept telling us the internet was never built to be secure. And it really wasn't, to be honest. You know, when we first started internet banking, even your browsers weren't using encryption. I don't know if you knew that. Back in the early, early days of internet banking, everything was wide open text. So you would go to your bank's website and you would type in your username and your password. And if there was a savvy hacker out there who could be line sniffing as you were sending the traffic between your endpoint, i.e. your computer at your desk or whatever, and your bank, they could snag that information in clear text. I mean, there wasn't any type of encryption done. And then they came out with the 128-bit encryption. And I'm sure some of you remember this. It was probably back in the early 2000s. you had to upgrade to the newest browser to be able to log into your bank. And it was a big deal, at least for me. And that was when you started seeing HTTPS with a little lock at the beginning of the URL when you typed it there. And that meant that it was encrypted. So at least there was some sort of key that if a hacker sniffed your traffic and you were entering in your username and password, they would also need to know the key that you used, which, you know, 128-bit was pretty strong. Not the strongest there is now, but it was still better than clear text. They would have to be able to decode that key to be able to steal your information. Well, you know, that's kind of how then it followed through, even with e-commerce. We did HTTPS, and we used credit cards, and it's worked fine so far. But apparently, corporate America, in just the last couple of years, have just gotten so lax on patches and scanning technology, and I don't know, maybe they stopped buying intrusion detection software. I don't know how to explain it, but out of the blue, we just had this amazing, and you know what, maybe too, maybe there's just so many criminals in the world, so many underground hackers, and, you know, not saying it's not possible, they've been doing this online warfare for a while. You remember we talked about Keith Alexander way back in June or July, 2 years ago, I think it's been already, if you can even believe it. But we spent like 3 days looking at a biography and an interview written by Wired Magazine about Keith Alexander, who's the head of, I don't know what he was the head of. Was he that of the NSA? He was the head of the NSA and their spying division. And he had like six divisions underneath him that he created, and it included all of the military, and pretty much he was the man that was in charge of acquiring hackers, training them, and sending them after targets. And, you know, we actually had some acquaintances that were going to events such as Black Hat, the Black Hat Conference in Nevada, who had mentioned that the NSA, the FBI, the alphabet agencies as well, typically show up there and try to recruit hackers. Well, Keith Alexander is long gone. He retired after he built up this large conglomerate of hacking and spying agencies. He got them lots of money. Nobody argued with Keith Alexander. And if you haven't read that Wired article, you should. Because it's long, it's very detailed, but it will make your hair stand on end when you realize how deep this all goes. But when Alexander, quote-unquote, retired to spend time with family, he then, of course, opened his own cyber consulting business to help people protect against data breaches. And one of the very first suggestions I remember was Alexander telling Goldman Sachs that they really should get some sort of security audit. And I don't remember what was going on at the time, but of course there was probably some, like there isn't always, but there was some backdoor, you know, potential, maybe Goldman Sachs had done a crime type thing going on. But it almost came off to me like it was a threat. Like, Goldman Sachs, we know all about what you're doing. And here I am, Mr. Keith Alexander, newly retired with my new business. And I need some big clients. And they would not play. They would not play with him. They would not let, and I mean, who would? They would not let him in there to start sniffing around. Because here's the thing. Under the guise of cybersecurity, I mentioned to you guys before, back one of the private companies I'd worked for many years doing e-business stuff, one of the things that the owner would not allow was any of our stuff to be on the outside. We were not allowed to contract any third-party softwares or service companies that could get some noses on the inside of our corporation. And there's many reasons for that. But, you know, I mean, just from a basic perspective, if I were a business owner, I wouldn't want third-party companies being able to sniff all my traffic and see what's going on inside my company and know more than I did. I would want that to be my internal IT guy that I vetted myself, that I can see every day. And as they used to say, a one throat to choke if something goes wrong. But Goldman Sachs would not play ball with Keith Alexander. Well, what happened just shortly thereafter? Oh, my God. Goldman Sachs got hacked. Oh, who would have thunk it? It was actually pretty funny because you know that that's what happened. But anyway, so on that same line, I saw a story yesterday titled, and I just typed it. Now I don't remember what I typed, but it was something 21 NSA. Yeah, NSA 21 has been declared. You're like, what? What is NSA 21? NSA 21 is the merging of cyber offense and cyber defense. The NSA is merging its cyber offense and defense teams, going against prior recommendations. So this is now that Keith Alexander is gone. I don't remember the name of the new guy that took over, but he's even scarier. I mean, at least Keith was from New York. I think he came from Syracuse. This new dude that took over, like every time I see a picture of him, he just looks so scary. The NSA is creating a directorate of operations over the coming months to fuse together its offensive and defensive security teams, according to a speech given at the agency today. Essentially, the team that collects information about system vulnerabilities in order to exploit them for espionage purposes will work alongside the team that collects information about vulnerabilities in order to shield U.S. networks from cyber attacks. Now, isn't it amazing, too, that with this whole conglomerate that we've been talking about, with this public-private partnership, this $19 billion of tech money, to be able to help corporate America stay safe, because now we're all a cog in the wheel. You know, Sony got hacked. Oh my God. It was a breach of national security. You know, and one thing that happened when Keith Alexander was still running the NSA is that they had declared that hacking by a foreign government was a declaration of war. And that's when also you started seeing DARPA really getting into the game. DARPA was building tools with DARPA Dan to be able to track down any type of unsavory character in the dark web, go after child molesters and drug cartels. Yes! We're all insurgents. We're going to hunt down ISIS everywhere they are. You know, this has just been this closing of the bag to get rid of anonymity so none of us can do anything without being bag tagged and tracked. And they're paying for it with our money. Anyway, let's get back to the story. This is essentially the team that collects information about system vulnerabilities in order to exploit them for espionage purposes. And yeah, that's the stuff that they used to use on foreign countries' networks to be able to get in and spy on them. But the system vulnerabilities in order to exploit for espionage purposes are also the tools that they've been using on us to be able to spy on what's going on within our country. That came out New York Times. We 3-4 years ago, we already reported on that. That's a done deal. And then one company, and I don't remember, it's early and it's cold out here, but there was that one company we read about. They actually stupidly published their list of customers and was like anyone who was anyone in global law enforcement was on that list of at least going and having presentations about their software, how they were using vulnerabilities in Flash. That's why every time people are like, oh, the player doesn't work or whatever, you know that they're screwing around with Flash. So there are Flash vulnerabilities that they were taking advantage of, as well as iTunes. They were embedding, they're finding holes within iTunes. I don't know if it was the client or whatever, but that was in that New York Times story. They found some sort of vulnerability in iTunes. They literally could insert a payload. So when you installed like a new update, I don't know. I know for Firefox, they created a fake Firefox file So your computer didn't even realize, if you had an antivirus, it didn't even realize that it was something that shouldn't have been there. But again, they have all these sneaky little ways where they find vulnerabilities in your applications and then they exploit them for internal and external purposes, as well as work alongside the team that collects information about the vulnerabilities in order to shield the U.S. networks from cyber attacks. So do you get that? So they're scanning, and there's vulnerability software out there, just like there's intrusion detection software. And again, you don't need $19 billion to buy a copy. But what you do, we used to scan networks for a living. We would go out, you'd contract, it'd be a couple $1,000s, because it took like 3 days or so. You had to set up what they call probes in different areas on your network. And then you'd run the scanner and it would simulate traffic and it would start pounding your site from outside. And then inside it would be monitoring to see what kind of traffic got through, to see what patches you had, to see where they got through, so then you could fix it. That's what the so-called quote-unquote white hat hackers did. They would help you, especially as a large organization. You wouldn't want to hire somebody with hacking skills to try to hack your network with a white hat on, to then tell you where your vulnerabilities were so you could fix them. Well, this NSA 21 is not only working to find software vulnerabilities to be able to protect against them, but the same group now, the very, very same group in this newly merged NSA 21 is going to be using those same vulnerabilities to hack computers. Come on. That makes the NSA that was the biggest joke before even a bigger joke than it was before. This reorganization is called NSA 21, and it was publicly disclosed today, and that was yesterday. The project is described as a 2-year plan to help the agency better address national security threats, especially surrounding its cyber missions. Signals intelligence, which exploits vulnerabilities to spy on foreign targets, and the Information Assurance Directorate, which is the IAD, which protects the NSA's own classified network against spying, will be combined under the new Directorate of Operations, the Washington Post explained earlier this week. Now, wait. If we have so much advanced technology within DARPA and within the NSA, then how come we just read yesterday about Obama's $19 billion needed to upgrade for cybersecurity? Why aren't we using our own internal departments to fix the cluster F that is the federal government computer network that Obama wants us to believe needs $19 billion in fixing? And as a matter of fact, then they're going to hire outside agencies to come in and fix that network at a premium. Does that make any sense at all? I mean, if the NSA is just so damn advanced, they should be putting the NSA to work. Step to it. Earn your dollars. As my old boss always used to say, eat your own dog food. Once you eat your own dog food, then you use your company as the case study to sell to other organizations. Eat your own dog food, federal government. You can spend all of our tax dollars on this NSA bullshit, and then you're going to make it all of our problems to have to deal with them hacking and cracking us. But you're not going to use them to fix your own network. I don't understand that. Maybe we're not supposed to. Five other directorates, in addition to operations, will be created to realign the agency's interests and investment in its workforce. It also refocuses the NSA on conducting research. Oh, what does this all mean? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this starts playing out. The cyber portion of the plan contradicts a suggestion made 3 years ago At the time, shortly after Edward Snowden's leaks, the President's Review Group argued that the IAD become a separate agency within the Department of Defense. The IAD's work to protect systems across the U.S. from cyber attacks is totally different from the NSA's stated espionage goals, which could lead to an unwelcomed mixing of missions. We are concerned that having AID embedded in a foreign intelligence organization creates potential conflicts of interest, the group wrote. Yeah, but the thing is, look at, once we have things like the TPP that's going to create this big global conglomerate, we're all going to be foreign espionagers. You know, there isn't going to be any more American versus Libyan. Well, American, let's see, who's been the TPP? American versus South Pacifican. No, I don't know. You know, just as they march all this crap forward, the big UN groups, you know, it's all going to be under surveillance for whatever the next big pandemic is. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to even say. It's to the point of beyond ridiculous that I just really want to go sit on the top of a mountain somewhere and say, fuck all these assholes. If you want to know my honest opinion. Anyway, the IAD relies on private companies disclosing their bugs to the agency and has already faced an uphill battle after Snowden's releases. And yeah, after Snowden released all that data, that's when we first started seeing all these tech companies start showing up and sitting down at big long tables in Washington, meeting with Obama, because they wanted to make sure their ass was covered as the NSA was coming to them and demanding information from these private corporations that had inked or clicked a quote-unquote privacy agreement between all their end users. If they bent over and gave up your information to the feds without even the blink of an eye, without a warrant, without anything, what was their liability? And so they all went to Washington, and Washington said, shh, don't worry about it. We'll cover your ass, and you know what? We're going to make all these hackers so everyone's going to be scared. And then we can just merge this corporatocracy with federal government and get all of our security guys involved so you won't be liable at all. And hence the beginning of what we see coming now. All right, anyway, government skepticism is high and discourages private companies from disclosing vulnerabilities to the agency. When the severe heartbleed vulnerability was discovered in 2014, many people speculated that the NSA had known about it for years, and I'll bet you they did. Same goes for the recent controversy about a backdoor at Juniper Networks VPN suite, and I'm sure they knew that one as well. VPNs are within an encrypted tunnel. That's probably as secure as you can get unless you go with something heavy duty. And if they had the keys to get into a VPN, anybody using Juniper's equipment who was doing a point-to-point tunnel, they would be able to sniff that traffic. Anyway, this restructuring backpedals on a report while also confirming that the NSA's offense and defense share the same mission of identifying bugs and that their coordination could prove fruitful for both missions. However, it is likely it won't do much to boost the NSA's broader standing and trustworthiness for companies already hesitant to share vulnerability information. And you know what? For those companies who are hesitant to share information, don't worry about it, because unless you take your entire network and all your employees to some sort of Ubuntu Linux or whatever by July of next year, you better start thinking about buying new PCs or upgrading to Windows 10 to make sure that they could suck all your data at any minute, any second, as Microsoft takes now the lead role in securing the desktop and providing that information to any global crime agency that may ask for it. All right, along those same lines, if I've been having major issues today, I've rebooted both browsers. We're gonna see if it loads. I actually loaded them on a second computer as well, just in case. All right, well, not gonna load on the first one, but it's loaded up on the second one. Intel chief, and he looks like Clapper in the picture. It is Clapper. Intel chief confirms our worst nightmares. As we've been talking about this Internet of Things and being able to Internet enable your underwear, we looked at that with that Under Armour back a couple weeks ago that partnered with IBM. The dude made t-shirts and cotton underwear and stuff for athletes. Well, now they're doing things like making smart sneakers, right? We have all these health companies now coming out with Fitbits and being able to track all your activity and where you are, where you sleep, what you're doing. Well, yeah, you guessed it. Intel chief confirms our worst nightmares. Home smart devices are ideal for spying on you. So your refrigerator is going to get a little eyeball. You'll be able to talk to it, and he'll be able to watch you. Your Google Nest surveillance and heating and cooling system will be able to report you back to the NSA. Director, this is by Claire Burnish. Good old Claire. Go, Claire. Director of the National Intelligence, James Clapper, stated to the Senate Armed Services Committee that the Internet of Things, the so-called smart devices, vehicles, and appliances, which employ various computer technologies, may be used to spy and keep tabs on people in the future. Remember yesterday, too, we read a story about the U.S. finally agreeing with Google that their AI computer that runs the self-driving car can now be considered a person. And with it being considered a person and giving it the legal ability now to drive unattended, that means that they can now physically remove any type of car controls from the car. So Google self-driving cars are ready to remove the steering wheel, the brake pedal, and the gas pedal. So anyone who gets into the car does not require a driver's license, and the self-driving car will take you anywhere you want to go. And it's a smart car, so don't worry about it. That car won't take you to the police station or slam you into a wall if it decides that you're about ready to have an accident and there's people in the way, and you killing you or the few occupants in the car would be less bloodshed. Oh, yeah. Those types of smart devices. In the future, intelligence services might use the Internet of Things for identification, surveillance, monitoring, location tracking, targeting for recruitment, or to gain access to networks or user credentials, says Clapper's prepared testimony. Though his remarks were ostensibly and not surprisingly directed toward the fight against terrorism, remember, they're under every bed and in every closet, and they're getting crowded out by those new Zika mosquitoes. The potential implications for all civilians cannot be ignored, particularly considering that the Internet of Things comprises everything from smart cars and fitness tracking devices to televisions and Barbie dolls. And yeah, remember we talked about the Barbie dolls. Barbie can have a full-blown two-way conversation with you and a Wi-Fi connection, meaning that she could be reporting anything your seven-year-old is saying back to whoever is listening at the other end. And it's pretty disturbing. I would not allow any of those little robot toys in my house at all. Clapper warns that the threat from Russia, China, This is what I said yesterday. Of course, it's the Russians. It's the Chinese. I forgot about Iran and North Korea, as well as ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Can be expected in the form of cyber attacks, gathering information about individuals and even psyops, which make the Internet of Things vulnerable to malicious intent and ideal for U.S. intelligence gathering purposes. Now, remember, who was working on being able to secure the Internet of Things? Do we remember that? Oh, DARPA Dan. Yes, DARPA Dan was. And DARPA Dan then left DARPA and went to work for who? CupiDoll for anyone. Starts with a G, ends in an O. Google. He did. So, you know what? Internet of Things will be secure. They're going to have their automatic sentry that'll be scanning the perimeter. And DARPA, Dan, and Google make sure your information is safe. So keep buying. Keep buying those internet-enabled devices that can watch you 24/7 and make sure that nothing bad happens to you. The government's here to keep you safe, right? If you haven't learned anything, that's what you should know. Keep buying into it. I wanted to see. Here it is. I caught a story. And I'm not done with this one, but we'll bounce to a second one for a second. I found a story from January when I was first talking about tech CEOs being in bed with the White House. And this was recent news because, I mean, that was already a couple summers ago when they were doing the afternoon lunches at the big, long White House table. But this is January 8th, 2016. White House asks Silicon Valley to help silence ISIS online. And I just saw that Twitter took down 125,000 Twitter accounts last week because, quote unquote, ISIS was using them to recruit. And there was some family whose son had gotten killed overseas by ISIS, and they were suing Twitter. Like, talk about America. They were suing Twitter because they said he wouldn't have been killed had Twitter not allowed them to have a Twitter account where they could send information back and forth that could have potentially been used to kill their family member overseas. So Twitter responds by looking at accounts and determining who's an insurgent and who isn't, and then just shutting them down. I mean, this is like the next step to full-blown censorship. And I'm not saying that real ISIS should be allowed to do any of that shit. I want to all get along. Let's stop cutting off heads, blowing people up. I mean, this is just ridiculous. You know, bloodshed is bloodshed. Get over it. I mean, we created those monsters, but don't think that that ISIS sword isn't being waved around to put people like you and me, what they call... I was listening to BBC the other day, and they were talking about political dissidents out of China, you know, disappearing after writing anti-government books while living outside the country, mind you. And I was like, wow. I looked up the definition of political dissident, and that's pretty much anybody who's speaking out about the bullshit that's going on in the federal government right now is considered a political dissident. Things don't work out too well if they catch up to you. Because they don't want you speaking out. They don't like criticism. Narcissists don't like to be outed. The psychopath. All right. Anyway, the Obama administration wants Silicon Valley to help drown out the Islamic State's message. Top federal officials and major American technology firms held a summit in San Jose, California on Friday. It was in January, to discuss how to stop ISIS from recruiting terrorists on social media. So now we have all of our big tech firms, probably including Google and Facebook and everybody else, Apple, Facebook, Twitter, meeting feds to talk terrorists on social media. Unbelievable. But what are we paying for all these NSA guys sitting in this big NSA cyber patrol center? What are we paying them for. They can't track down which Twitter account is leaked to whom. The White House is exploring several ideas, according to discussion outlined from Friday's meeting. One key focus is tracking radicals. Not ISIS, radicals. The White House wanted to discuss, quote, techniques to detect and measure radicalization, unquote. Federal officials recognize the discussion, quote, requires consideration of First Amendment protections and privacies and civil liberty concerns, according to the outline. So wait, to detect radicals. I was reading something the one day. It's interesting they mentioned the First Amendment and privacy and civil liberties. I was reading something the one day about how any idea that doesn't conform can be considered radical. And radicalization can be contagious. So if you're around a bunch of people and they're talking about something and they're explaining to you how you're being screwed over by the government for taxes or for whatever, I mean, I don't know, pick an entire list of how we're being screwed over. But it's very possible if I show you proof of that and I start showing you all the documentation behind whatever my assertion is, you're going to go, oh, look at that. And you're going to become radicalized too. It's contagious. And that's some of the research they've already been doing, watching social networks and dropping little news items in there to see how people react, or making, I don't know, after the bombing in France, they did the Je suis Charlie, right, with the Charlie Hebdo attacks, and everybody, not me, but many of the sheep changed their little profile avatar to be the colors of the French flag. Don't think that there aren't sociology departments out there from universities that are getting DARPA dollars that aren't researching the social interactions with social media in large groups. And what they discovered is that most people are followers. They're not leaders. They're followers. They do what other people suggest because they can't think for themselves. But, oh, you know, it makes me look cool. Oh, well, look, he's smart. Let's do what he says. That's the way the majority of America, and I don't know, I'm not going to speak for the rest of the world, but at least in this country, it's the way the majority of America is. So if they can detect who those quote-unquote leaders are, the free thinkers, the ones who think outside the box, the ones who stand up above all the situations, look down and assess things and can call out the bullshit, those people are the ones they want to find. Those are the people who are dangerous, not the followers. The followers, they could make them walk off a cliff like a lemming and nobody would ever know. And that's what they're doing already. Eat your GMOs and get your vaccines, Johnny. We got measles tomatoes coming soon. Federal officials recognize the discussion, quote, requires consideration of First Amendment protections and privacy and civil liberty concerns. The second idea centers on propaganda. And we know that as of the NDAA, of 20, I don't even know what year it is anymore, maybe 2013. I don't know, I read it in one of them. They made propaganda on the U.S. population, that same State Department program we used to use externally on other countries to try to, quote-unquote, promote democracy, is now being used legally internally on its own population in the United States. Propaganda against ISIS. ISIS is adept at sharing warfare propaganda. And the government is now hoping that tech firms will block pro-ISIS messages, photos, and videos. So they are giving them a thumbs up for full out-blown censorship. But the White House also wants an increase. They want to increase the availability of alternative content. What does that mean? The White House also wants an increase in the availability of alternative content. I don't get that. You know, and we found out yesterday as well, Google, with their new AI, their search division, becoming part of their AI division as the head of search is stepping down. And the new search algorithm that was released, they were talking about using their database in their AI division. They have this whole truth, it's called the Knowledge Vault, I believe, where they have all these truthful facts that they've acquired from the internet. And one of the ways that they're going to start ranking pages is using this quote-unquote truth algorithm. They scan pages now and look how much information on your page jives with their knowledge vault full of truthful information. Remember, Bill Clinton in 2011, and I think he said this in regards to Fukushima, that there were just too many internet rumors flying around. And, you know, there are people who just apparently in the United States don't know how to distinguish between fact or fiction, who don't know how to do research, who don't know how to use the internet properly, who don't know how to read many sources and draw their own conclusions. No, that pesky internet is full of lies. Full of lies, I tell you. So the way we're going to get around that is we need to have a third-party company, not a government agency, he said, because a government agency could be seen as censorship. So we need a third-party company that'll be determining the truthfulness of content on the internet. And lo and behold, 5 years later, here comes this Google AI-run truth algorithm as the search engine head of the beginning steps down and the AI division of Google merges with the search engine. How freaking convenient is that? In a separate briefing, the White House Press Secretary Josh Ernst said the administration is seeking, quote, ways to create, publish, and amplify content that counteracts the radicalizing message from ISIS and other extremists. I get it now. They're finding ways to amplify content to counteract that radicalizing message. So they would explain how Claire Burnish's article about the Zika mosquitoes and asking questions about the correlation between the genetically modified mosquitoes of Oaxaca and where they were released in Brazil, asking like how interesting it was that these mosquitoes in this quote-unquote mutant Zika outbreak coincided with each other. They would explain how she got an attack out of a publication such as Discover Magazine in 3 days after writing the article, calling her out by name. And within a week, I don't know, search Zika, you are going to see all of these scientific publications that are screaming about conspiracy theory and using pictures like cats wearing tinfoil hats to discredit anybody questioning the science. I'm going to tell you, I dug down. You got to go to page 27 now in your search results to find any type of decent information that isn't a paid shill. But I'm going to tell you what. You go back. There are scientists who've been saying exactly what we've been saying. The dangers are not a closed textbook. This is not 100% tested inside and out, proven science. Nothing will ever go wrong. They just want to make sure they're controlling the narrative. You know, I find it very interesting, too. I've been noticing over the last couple of weeks that some of my Twitter accounts for some of my feeds that I put out there have been getting lots of professional subscribers, like ones that I do stuff on, like the brain, genetics, things of that nature. But people from those industries and companies in those industries seem to be subscribing to some of my news feeds. And in the beginning, I was like, oh, look, we got a geneticist. Oh, look, there's a neurologist. But now I'm thinking that that might be very targeted as to why they're paying attention, especially reading this sentence, and I'll read it again. This is just from January. In a separate briefing on Friday, Josh Ernst, the White House press secretary, said that the administration is seeking, quote, ways to create, publish, and amplify content that counteracts the radicalizing message from ISIS and other extremists, unquote. The Obama administration, you know, we actually read a story the other day from that professor. He's an engineering professor that actually exposed the Flint water crisis. His article was all about the scientists being corrupted to the machine with all these dangling research dollars that are coming from rich billionaires, rich companies, and feds. So they just keep their mouths shut now. Their mouths shut. And parrot exactly what they've been told to say in order to keep their jobs and keep their funding and think that they're going to get the golden boy star for their career because they helped the machine. All I got to say is go back throughout history and look at the sympathizers and the ones that helped the fascist government, the corporatocracy, the takeover, the complete and utter loss of liberties of a nation. Look at what happened to the sympathizers. You will be known as the future criminals, not me. Think what you will, but I'm not hurting anyone. I'm spreading information. I'm spreading the ability to still critically think, something that is sorely lacking in America. People are just lemmings. Walk off a cliff and wouldn't even look as they're typing on their mobile devices that they're addicted to with dopamine. And actually, there was a brand new story about that, and maybe we'll hit that on Monday as we get into the brain, because I don't think we're going to get deep into all these brain stories they have lined up. But they found a new protein, I think it was, that is tied to dopamine production. It's tied to addiction. But they have a drug already out there that they're using for weight loss that helps control overeating. And they discovered that that same drug and that same protein that that drug suppresses in the brain also helps cocaine addicts kick the coke, because it stops the cravings. It's the same. And if we go back to our research, it's the same part of the brain utilizing dopamine. So pretty interesting. We'll look at that maybe Monday. All right, anyway, back to the story. The Obama administration has also heard from advertising executives interested in helping craft those messages. So remember back like 3-4 months ago, we found out that they were hiring some sort of new advertising group within the federal government to help spin all these messages so we could feed them to the resistant consumers. Remember that? Yeah. Good old Bernaysian advertising is coming back. I mean, it's already been here, but it is coming back officially as propaganda to America. The Obama administration has also heard from advertising executives interested in helping craft those messages. What? Anti-ISIS, anti-vaxxer, anti-GMO messages with kitty cats and tinfoil hats? Yeah. How scary is this? This is like a psychotic novel, what's going on right now. The next thing is going to be like Clockwork Orange, where you're held in a room and you got little vices on your eyeballs, and they're going to force you to sit there and watch their new pro-technocracy propaganda, because you will not conform, as they're putting your new Google DARPA implant. And actually, there's this brand new little brain thing that they can slip now right into a blood vessel. They don't even have to drill a hole in your brain anymore. Friday's meeting in California included Obama's chief of staff, a top counterterrorism advisor, the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, and Department of Justice officials. All of the leading tech firms were there, including Apple, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, and Twitter. Can you believe this? I can't eat. You know, this is like everything that people pointed to me about 10, even 15 years ago that I was a lunatic. You're just paranoid, Jewel. You're just paranoid. No, I'm not. I don't know. I was having visions. And this was all going on a long time ago. It just wasn't full frontal out in the open. Now it's all out in the open because they've convinced the populace that we should all be afraid. And the criminals in charge are going to keep us safe because they have our best interests at heart. We're going to fix it all. Look at how shitty it is. Don't worry about it. We have the power. Well, they just brought all the technical organizations that are out there whose technology we've been using day in, day out for many years in the case of Microsoft or Apple or Facebook or Google or Twitter, who knows a lot about you, who has a lot of biometrics that maybe they've been collecting, but, you know, under the privacy policy, they weren't giving it to anyone. But now that they've been brought under the big umbrella, under national security, you know what? Their asses are covered. So they could give it all up. Facebook, of course, would not discuss the exact details of the meeting, but a company representative said the social media platform was on board to help. This meeting confirmed that we are united in our goal to keep terrorists and terror-promoting material off the internet. Facebook does not tolerate terrorists or terror propaganda, and we work aggressively to remove it as soon as we become aware of it. The thing is, whose definition of terrorist? Am I terrorizing someone because I'm pointing out the dangers of vaccinations and somebody in little suburbia, complete brainwashed housewife thinks I'm terrorizing her because little Johnny might get the measles from my unvaccinated child? I don't know. It's all about the definition of what terrorism is. All right, back to this Internet of Things now spying on you. Let's get back to Clapper. Clapper was at this tech conference as well. So Clapper was speaking at the subcommittee hearing. It says those remarks were ostensibly and not surprisingly directed against the fight against terrorism. The potential implications for all civilians cannot be ignored, particularly considering that the Internet of Things comprises everything from smart cars to fitness tracking devices and televisions and Barbie dolls. Future cyber operations will almost certainly include an increased emphasis on changing or manipulating data to compromise its integrity, i.e. accuracy and reliability. Broader adoptions of the Internet of Things devices and artificial intelligence, such as in public utilities, to be able to check out like how much energy you're consuming, as well as healthcare, and that's your precision medicine using Watson as a back end, will only exacerbate these effects, as Clapper warns the threats from Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and such non-state actors as ISIL and Al-Qaeda can be expected in the form of cyber attacks, gathering information about individuals, and even psyops, which make the Internet of Things vulnerable to malicious intent. No matter the possible veracity in concerns of national intelligence, the agency's desire to thwart terrorism with an exponential increase in surveillance should be disquieting to all civilians wishing to maintain a modicum of privacy. A researcher with the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard warned in their report, oh, called Don't Panic. The Internet of Things promises a brand new frontier for networking objects, machines, and environments in ways that we are just beginning to understand. When, say, a television has a microphone and a network connection, and it's reprogrammable by its vendor, it could be used to listen into one side of a telephone conversation taking place in its room, no matter how encrypted the telephone service itself might be. These forces are on a trajectory towards a future with more opportunities for surveillance. There was someone at Harvard saying that. In fact, the Internet of Things has provided a veritable goldmine for the surveillance community. Former CIA director, good old David Petraeus, pointed out in The Guardian, discussed the enormous potential for spying found in common appliances and devices as far back as 2012 already. In terms of interest, items of interest will be located, identified, monitored, and remotely controlled through technologies such as radio frequency identification, sensor networks, tiny embedded servers, and energy harvesters, all connected to the next generation of internet using abundant, low-cost, high-power computing. So look out, people, with terrorists, foreign actors, and U.S. intelligence taking command of all of our Internet of Things, our smart cars, our smartphones, our smart homes, our smart sneakers, our smart fridges, our smart toys, our smart toothbrushes, our smart toilets, and everything else. There's nowhere to run, and there's nowhere to hide, it seems. All right, guys, well, guess what? It's the last 10 seconds of the show. I can't believe it. It's Friday. Thank God. Make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is live up next. And tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern, we have Josh, Anti-Tyranny News Live, Primer Time, The Boys, This Week's Show at 8 with Michael and Nick at 9, Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turville. At 10, Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt at 11, Anti-Media Radio with LaVon Live. All right, guys, have an awesome weekend. Make sure you stick around, and I'll catch up with you on Monday. Take care.